Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3. And in this weekly segment, we speak to BBC journalists about the international stories they're tracking in the week ahead. Today, we're joined by BBC broadcast journalist Peter Ross. Pete, thanks for joining us as always.
Hi, Harry. Thanks for having me.
So we recently learnt of the death of Queen Elizabeth's husband, Prince Philip, on Friday. The Duke of Edinburgh died at Windsor Castle, aged 99. Pete, what's been the reaction in the UK on Friday and over the weekend?
Well, tributes have been pouring in over the weekend, Harry. The British Prime Minister was one of the first to lead those tributes on Friday afternoon, shortly after the sad news of the Duke of Edinburgh's passing. He said that the Prince had earned the affection of generations. Other political leaders around the UK, from Scotland, Northern Ireland, they sent messages of condolence as well. And today the House of Commons, Parliament, will meet for a special session to pay tribute to Prince Philip. Messages have been coming in from around the world. The Prime Minister of Australia is one of the first international leaders to pay his tributes to Prince Philip. And the President of the United States, Joe Biden, he wrote a fairly lengthy statement online, but he also tweeted saying that Prince Philip's legacy will live not only through his family, but in all the charitable endeavours he shaped. Now, yesterday there was a special service at Canterbury Cathedral, and after the service, Prince Andrew spoke on behalf of the Queen. And he said that the Queen had described the death of the Duke of Edinburgh as, quote, having left a huge void in her life. They were, of course, together for over 70 years. Now, Prince Andrew himself said that his father's death was a terrible loss, and his family was rallying round to help the Queen. Now, a few people have made note of those words, rallying round, and if we take the words of the ex-Prime Minister John Major, he said when paying tribute to Prince Philip that the royal family's shared grief was, quote, an ideal opportunity to mend rifts. Now, many think that that could have something to do with, of course, the rift between Harry and the rest of the royal family that's been ongoing for the last few months. And this morning, the Sun newspaper has reported that Harry flew back into the UK. He lives in America now, of course, flew back into the country over the weekend. Now, he will have to be back in the country right now and quarantine if he is, of course, to attend that funeral, which we now know is due to take place on Saturday.
Could you tell us more about that, Pete? He'll be laid to rest on Saturday, we understand?
Yes. Now, what I can say is that he will not have a state funeral, and there will be no lying in state. Now, I'll tell you what that means in just a minute, but that's very much in line with the Duke of Edinburgh's wishes. An aide is once quoted as saying that Prince Philip himself said he didn't see himself as important enough for a state funeral. Now, the honour of a state funeral is usually bestowed to a monarch, though there was an exception made for Winston Churchill. He was given a state funeral. Lying in state, slightly different. That's that allows the public to pay the respects. That's happened to the last three sovereigns consorts, including the Queen Mother. In 2002, an estimated 200,000 people queued over 3 days to pay their respects to her at Westminster Hall. That will not happen for the Prince, partly in due because it was his own wishes, but I think also we have to look at the fact that we're going through COVID right now and that large gatherings of crowds. Certainly I've seen some reaction online from people saying that they really want to grieve, they want to gather together and to lay flowers, and the palace really has discouraged that, saying if you want to pay tribute to the Duke of Edinburgh, you should stay home and watch the funeral on television this Saturday. Now, it's happening at 3 o'clock this Saturday afternoon, and what we do know is that he will be taken from where he is now to from Windsor Castle to St George's Chapel. He'll be driven there in a Land Rover, which has been modified, designed by the Prince himself, we're hearing, and his coffin will be draped in a flag, which will represent his own personal flag, his standard, which will represent elements of his life, including a Greek flag in there to represent his Greek heritage, and a picture of a castle to represent, of course, the Duke of Edinburgh. There's a famous castle in the city of Edinburgh. Now, again, as I said, due to the coronavirus concerns, the public are regretfully requested not to attend, not to gather in public, and to stay home and watch it on television.
And speaking of COVID, infection rates are still rising in many places as the UK grapples with rolling out vaccines. Pete, what's the latest you're seeing?
Well, what I'd say right now is it's a bit of a confusing picture because we've got different things going on in different places. Here in the UK today, we're going through our latest stage of opening up. And that means that, some retail shops can open up, gyms, hairdressers, people very excitedly booking appointments for that. However, that is in contrast to what's going on in parts of Europe where you're seeing infection rates rise. Here in the UK, the numbers have been going in the right directions for quite a while now. Infection rates down, death rates down, and our vaccination, you know, rate going up and, doing very well, more than half the adult population now vaccinated. However, as I said, infection rates going up across Europe. And I think one place internationally that really jumped out at me this morning when going through the headlines and listening on the radio is what's happening in Brazil. The rates in Brazil have... The thing that jumped out at me was that increasing numbers of people going into hospital in Brazil have are under 40. And what we know about, or what I think we know, or what we think we know about the coronavirus is that it's more deadly, it's worse for you the older that you are, and if you have underlying health conditions, whether that might be overweight or some issues with, you know, respiratory issues. However, in Brazil, with this new variant, which is far more transmissible as well, lots of healthy, seemingly healthy, no pre-existing conditions, no symptoms, large numbers of under 40s going into hospital. So I think that's something we need to look out for.
Another milestone is India reaching some grim ones as well, which means, I don't know, for the UK, maybe not so much international travel so soon?
Well, I think it's... for the UK, no, because the message that we're getting from Downing Street, that we're getting from the government at the moment, that we are still meeting our criteria to open up. So today, some of the shops open up, as I already described. In May, it's international travel next. And while we've not had a definite answer on this, that the government has said that we are on course to start allowing international travel from then, possibly using things called COVID passports or a traffic light system. You know, some countries are more dangerous to go to than others, you know, such as India or Brazil. But that's in stark contrast. You know, I got a taxi in today, and my cab driver said to me he doesn't understand why we were opening up and considering international travel when the picture is so bleak elsewhere. And I think that's a fair comment. You know, individual countries can do well, and you might be somewhere like New Zealand that's very isolated, and it's easier to close your borders.
Yeah.
But really, we need to strike a balance between, you know, the coronavirus and how to get back to how to get back to normal life. And that's the main issue. Just very quickly on it, Holland wants to bash on with letting people travel internationally. So today, a Dutch company is flying nearly 200 people to the Greek island of Rhodes for an 8-day holiday. It's a trip designed to test if tourism is basically feasible, you know, while COVID is still going on.
Right.
A couple of little interesting details about this, though. You might think if you've been isolated for a long time, a holiday to Greece, lovely sunny Greece, sounds amazing.
Sounds nice, yeah.
It does sound nice. However, the details that I've just found out this morning is that you're not allowed to leave the resort that you're being flown to, and that means you can't even get in the sea. So, I don't know. I mean, this you know, it throws up that question, doesn't it? We need to live with the virus, but how much, you know, enjoyment will you get out of flying internationally if you have to stay in your hotel?
Yep. Switching gears, though, the U.S. House and Senate will hold public hearings this week on the globe's greatest threats to U.S. national security. After a more than two-year hiatus, Pete, first up, what caused the hiatus and what's happening for the meetings to be significant and called again?
Yeah, these are very big public, very big committee meetings. They usually happen once a year. The House and the Senate both hold these big meetings, and for a public session, they invite along the heads of all the security councils and agencies over there. Now, to put it bluntly, why they've not happened in the last couple of years is Donald Trump. Because these committee meetings are an opportunity for the public to see what's on the minds and what these, you know, security agency chiefs think about the big global issues and threats at that time. And what happened during the Trump administration is that the information coming out of these committee hearings often directly contradicted the American president. So if Trump said that, you know, North Korea was fine and it was all under control and you know, peace was just around the corner, that was then contradicted by statements coming out from these committees. So they've not happened since then because essentially because of Donald Trump. Now, we now know, or we know that there's a new president in the White House now. He's, you know, the antithesis, you might say, to Trump. We remember that President Trump was America first. Well, President Biden says it's very much on his agenda to re-engage with the globe and all the big global issues. So, you know, big test for that. And just very quickly, there's so much to be talked about on the agenda. Mm. You know, you've before coming into this weekend, you've got the big SolarWinds hack, which the intelligence community over there attributed to Russia. Of course, I think maybe superseding that now is that massing of troops on the border of Ukraine, which is causing some consternation for the US and the international community. So you've got that. You've got issues with Chinese hackers. You've got a May 1st deadline looming that's supposed to see all US troops removed from Afghanistan. And I haven't even begun to talk about domestic extremism in the US. Remember the Capitol Hill, storming of Capitol Hill in January, or, say, Iran's nuclear deal from 2015. So I think it's safe to say a lot will be on the agenda, Howie.
I wish we had more time. Peter Ross is BBC broadcast journalist. Pete, thanks for your insights.
Thanks so much, Harry. Cheers.
This is Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.